Well, Education Minister Erica Stanford is promising to collaborate with Māori to develop a specific Māori education work program. The initial focus will be on improving achievement, attendance and engagement at school for tamariki Māori. It's one of six priorities she's announced for the sector. They also include establishing a clear curriculum, better monitoring of student progress and more support for students with additional needs. The Minister is with us now. Kia ora, good morning.
Morning.
Let's start with that Māori Education Work Program. What can you tell us about that? Is this for specifically for Kura and Wānanga, or is this for Māori students across the board?
Māori students across the board, of course, because we want excellent and equitable outcomes for all Māori students. We should expect that every Māori student in this country has the opportunity to succeed, but you know, that starts with literacy and numeracy, getting the basics right. And currently, that is not happening from all of the statistics and evidence we can see, that that's not happening. But there are pockets of excellence, like St. Joseph's Māori Girls School, who do a wonderful job. But I want to give you the example of Maramarua School, who are using structured literacy for the last couple of years. Their Māori achievement rates went from 37% of Māori kids at curriculum for reading, and last year it was 68%. So we know that the evidence shows us that actually an explicit, structured way of teaching is going to be best for our kids in those low decile schools, especially our Māori kids.
But you're talking, so is that a specific Māori education work program, or those are changes that you're looking to implement across the board, aren't you, to everyone?
Part of it will be a specific Māori strategy or work program. But for the most part, all of the things that I talk about in my priorities are aimed at closing the equity gap. And we know that Māori students and our Pacifica students and our low decile students are the ones who are affected the most when it comes to equitable outcomes. And so everything in my program is aimed at closing the gap. You would have heard me say yesterday in my stand-up that your means should not determine your future.
Tell us about the clearer curriculum. English and maths are being rewritten at the moment for implementation next year. That is not a lot of time. Will there be major changes in the way those subjects are taught next year?
We are using the work that's already been done by the previous government, we're keeping the same structure. But in terms of making sure that it's internationally comparable, that it is clear and concise and structured every single year so that there are outcomes every year is really important. The previous government had already done that in mathematics, but we're just making sure it's a bit more robust. It hadn't been done in the English curriculum, so that's what we're working on at pace at the moment to make sure that English is ready for next year.
So would this be like, you know, prescribed reading, that sort of thing, rather than people being able to, you know, follow their interest?
I'm leaving that up to the experts who are writing the curriculum at the moment. But what you will see is every single year a scope and a sequence and a structured way of laying out what must be taught and when, especially in subjects like literacy and mathematics, where it's very important that you do things in the right order.
What about the assessment and reporting? You're talking about smarter assessment and reporting. How will that work? Will it be collated at a national level? Who has access to that?
Working through that at the moment, but what I've always said to teachers is we want to measure progress. That's the very first, most important thing, to make sure kids are getting a year's outcome for a year's input, or more if they're falling behind. And the way that we measure progress is we have existing tools that many schools already use. We just want to make sure that they're using them consistently. So we will no doubt pick a couple of tools that we say every school must pick one of these tools and use them consistently.
And are you looking to incentivise those results in terms of teacher rewards?
No, I've already said that when I'm not interested in performance-based pay and using the data for that, what I am interested in is A, parents knowing where their kids are at and making sure that they're on track so they can help them out if they fall behind. Teachers know where their kids are at as well, so that impacts on their teaching and learning. But also for us, where do we put resource when things aren't going well, and where do we need to change policies? I can tell you right now that I'm managing like a $19 billion ministry, and I have no data to tell me what the outcomes are and where I need to divert resource. And so it's really important that we have some measures in place so we know where to catch kids up.
Kate Gainsford has been on the program this morning, and from their perspective, they're worried about the current staffing levels. I know you've talked about better support for training. 8,000 students, I think, going into school without a permanent teacher, at least 50% of teachers teaching outside their area of expertise, and too much focus or reliance on foreign teachers. So what are you going to do in terms of staffing levels?
Look, she's absolutely right. And I see Chris Abercrombie from the PPTA, he was talking about that as well. And I was at a conference with him in Singapore the last few days, and we had lots of discussions about this. Developing the workforce of the future is one of our priorities. And that starts with really good data. I've asked the ministry, how many specialist teachers are we down? And guess what? I don't hold that information. I do not know how many maths teachers we need. So the very first thing we have to do is work out, well, get some data and figure out what is the need so we can make sure that we're targeting the teachers that we need. You would have already seen me move teachers to the green list straight to residence, and I understand that that is something we need to do at the moment, well, because we can't train teachers instantly. But in terms of the future workforce, there will be some things that we'll be announcing in the budget. Because we are very focused on making sure we're training and retaining our own teachers.
Okay, just finally on the cell phone ban, there seems to be some pushback from some schools or reluctance from some schools to adopt this policy in its entirety. What will you be doing? I mean, how much flexibility are you allowing these schools, and what will be the repercussions if they don't uphold that ban?
Sure. Look, can I first start by saying it's been overwhelmingly positive, the response. Most schools who did it last semester have said to us that it's gone absolutely brilliantly well. We've had kids saying that they're talking to each other more, librarians telling us kids are getting books out of the library more, the noise in the playground is louder. We've got kids saying that they feel like there's a weight off their shoulders when they're unplugged for 6 hours. So it's extremely positive.
And sure, yeah, but there are other teachers who are saying it's their free time during the breaks and they're not going to cut down on the cell phone use
there
then.
There are a handful of schools who haven't implemented it yet.
What happens to them?
I think we've already said yesterday that ERA will be paying them a visit, but it's my expectation that they will follow this regulation.
And but if they don't?
Well, then ERA will be paying them a visit.
And then what happens?
It's the same with anything else. Well, it's the same with anything else. If they are not abiding by the ban, then ERA will visit them and help them to work through what their issues are and probably provide them with some research to show, how it's going in New Zealand. But, I mean, the Norwegian Institute of Public Health just published a paper which shows conclusively there's robust evidence on the impact of smartphone bans on student outcomes.
Okay, so just to be clear, there is no flexibility and no flexibility in your policy. The cell phones are out, banned during breaks and during class time, right through
the
school day.
If you take a look, which I'm sure you've done at the regulations, it does say there is a bit of flexibility. If a teacher decides, look, we're going to be going out and taking photos of plants and coming back and drawing them, you can use your phones. If it's an educational purpose and the teacher says, right, phones out to do this specific activity and then away, then that's okay. But otherwise, unless it's a health reason or a learning difficulty that you have and you're using a reader-writer, for example, or you're a teen parent and you've had a special exemption, then the expectation is that you will not have your phones out during class because, as I've said, all the evidence shows that the mental health outcomes and the educational outcomes are improved when kids are unplugged for 6 hours.
Sure, and same during the break.
Absolutely, yes.
Appreciate your time.
So they can talk to each other.